ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning we are reading Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 46. So we can chant 46 responsibly. Shri Rajo Vacha Nanda Kim Makarot Brahman Shreya Evam Mahodayam Yashoda cha mahabhaga Papo yasya stanam hari Shri Raju vacham Nanda kim akarod brahman Shreya evam mahodayam Yashoda cha mahabhaga Papo yasya stanam hari Shri Rajo vacha Nanda kim makarod brahman Shreya eva mahodayam Yashoda cha mahabhaga Papo yasya stanam hari Please chant. Shri Rajo vacha Nanda kim makarot brahman Shreya eva mahodayam Yashoda cha mahabhaga Papa yasya stanam hari Shri Rajo vacha Nanda kim makarod brahman Shreya evam mahodayam Yashoda cha mahabhaga Papo yasya stanam hari Shri Rajo vacha Nanda kim akarod brahman Shreya evam mahodayam Yashoda cha mahabhaga Papo yasya stanam hari Shri Rajo vacha Nanda kim akarod brahman Shreya evam mahodayam Yashoda cha mahabhaga Papo yasya stanam hari Okay, the word for word Shri Rajo vacha Maharaj Parikshit further inquired from Sukadev Goswami. Nanda, Maharaj Nanda. Kim, what? Akarot, performed. Brahman, O learned Brahmana. Shreya, auspicious activity. Like performing penances and austerity. Evam, as exhibited by him. Maha, Udayam, from which they achieve the greatest perfection. Yashoda, Mother Yashoda. Cha, also. Mahabhaga, most fortunate. Papal, drank. Yasya, of whom? Stanam, the breast milk. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the translation by Srila Prabhupada. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Yashoda, Parikshit Maharaj inquired from Sukadev Goswami, O learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chaturvida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritinor Juna. Without Sukriti or pious activities, no one can come to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is approached by four kinds of pious men. Artha Jignasur Atharti Gyanicha Bharatsabha. But here we see that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda surpassed all of them. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, what kind of pious activities did they perform in their past lives by which they achieved such a stage of perfection? Of course, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda are accepted as the mother and father of Krishna. Yet Mother Yashoda was more fortunate than Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, because Nanda Maharaj was sometimes separated from Krishna, whereas Yashoda, Krishna's mother, was not separated from Krishna at any moment. From Krishna's babyhood to his childhood, and from his childhood to his youth, Mother Yashoda was always in association with Krishna. Even when Krishna was grown up, he would go to Vrindavan and sit on the lap of Mother Yashoda. Therefore, there is no comparison to the fortune of Mother Yashoda, and Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, Yashodava Mahabhaga. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamlam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaguna Ragunatam Tam Savjivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishaka Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagat Pate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishabhana Sutu Devi Paramani Hari Priye Manchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaham. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So there's a verse quoted in the purport by Srila Prabhupada, or perhaps I should read the translation once again so we know where we are. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Yashoda, Parikshit Maharaj inquired from Sukadev Goswami, O learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love? So there's a verse that's quoted by Srila Prabhupada in the purport, that is Chatur Vida Bhajante Mam, Gyana Sukritino Arjuna, Ata Jignasur Atarti, Gyani Cha Bharata Sabha. And this translates as, O best among the Bharats, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me, the distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. And that's from Bhagavad Gita 7:16. So this statement of Lord Krishna's, wherein he describes four kinds of pious men who come to him to render service in devotion, it's quoted by Srila Prabhupada in order to point out that these four categories of men who come ready to render some devotional service have one common denominator. They all possess piety. So there's the term sukritina, or pious. So what these four categories of persons have is that they are scrupulous. It means that they follow moral and social laws. For example, they may be loyal or very devoted to their family. So that would be a social law, keeping the family unit intact. And there's also a certain amount of devotion to religious duties. And Srila Prabhupada puts it this way, those who obey the rules and regulations of scripture. So there's devotion to religious duties. So this is common in all the four categories of persons who come to approach Krishna to perform devotional service. So one can put it another way. Without sukriti, or pious activities, no one can actually come to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's interesting that that's the common component that's necessary for somebody to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this understanding is actually present in Maharaj Parikshit, because he's the one who is in making this inquiry of Sukadev Goswami. And he asks, with this understanding that comes from Krishna's explanation of the piety that's necessary in order to come and take shelter of him, he asks, what pious activities, and that is that word, Shreya Mahodayam, Nanda must have performed to get such great results. So he makes this inquiry. It seems a very practical inquiry. And Shreya is translated by Srila Prabhupada as auspicious activities. So that can be performing penances or austerities. And Mahodayam, Srila Prabhupada translates as from which they achieve the greatest perfection. So there's an underlying basis of austerities and penances that must have allowed them to take such great shelter of the Supreme Lord. So that's the understanding. And it's interesting because Maharaj Parikshit, he refers to Mother Yasoda as Mahabhaga, that's in the third line, or has been most fortunate. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he himself states that this being most fortunate translates into having performed pious activities, or particularly that her pious activities are more numerous even than Nanda Maharaj's, if one were to make such a comparison. So one can infer from this that there's a correlation between pious activities and good fortune. Now, there's this question raised by Maharaj Parikshit: what pious past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love? That's his question. So if one goes into it more deeply, so I'm going to look at it more sort of philosophically and see how it can all tie together. So that perfection is that their devotional service is different from that of the four categories of pious persons that come to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And that is that they didn't have any condition that needed to be fulfilled in exchange for devotional service. So going into this, pious individuals still require one particular thing. They need the association of a pure devotee in order to be cleansed of their respective desires. And their respective desires may be that somebody may want relief from some distress. Like, this is a common thing. At least many of the persons I've bumped into in the temple sometimes exchange a word or two. I learned that they've actually come because they're looking for some relief from distress. A difficult family situation, misunderstanding in the family. Generally, it's that one. That's the most common one. And particularly those persons that are wanting relief from some distress, they're usually persons that their background is such that they are performing many activities, but they're always looking for what positive result is there for themselves. So there's persons who are looking for some sort of extra finance. This is also very common. So they're actually coming to the Supreme Lord because they need a little boost in their finances. And then there's also persons that they have a certain curiosity. So usually that category will be the very young persons. They're the ones who have the curiosity because they're still in the process of being educated. And so their minds are attuned to different philosophical paths. And even there may be persons who genuinely want to know something of the absolute truth. And this category of persons are those that have become a little frustrated in their field of knowledge. Yeah, I recall when I was at university doing my final course in teaching philosophy to children, the professor, or two of the professors there, they were extremely receptive to the idea of bringing the whole group of students to the temple, which was in New Jersey at that time. And it's because they their field of knowledge was looking at a lot of mental processes, thinking processes, so they were naturally open to considering where that leads to ultimately. So maybe not complete frustration with their field, but understanding there has to be more. In all those cases where these persons are looking for some relief or some sort of satisfaction, They require going one step further, which is accepting a devotee of the Lord that's completely free from any kind of material motivations. And this kind of acceptance will sanctify their lives, because they come to be recipients of the kindness of that personality, which helps to cleanse them of their particular motivations for approaching the Supreme Lord. And in fact, that spiritual master is by definition somebody who's thoroughly cleansed and is completely surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This definition is found in the first canto in the fifth chapter, in the 30th verse. And one who is able to consider, if one is receiving that kindness from such a personality that's thoroughly cleansed, one is then able to consider himself in an, or herself, of course, in a new light. And that new light that one considers oneself in is, oh, I'm actually a humble servant of the Supreme Lord. And persons who do actually take to or allow themselves or come to that point of acceptance and seeing themselves in that position, they become perfect in their devotional service. And this is distinct from devotees who are merely, I mean, one uses the word devotee because they're still approaching the Supreme Lord, but they're approaching him with a desire for mitigating unhappiness or their poverty or the satisfaction of their inquisitiveness or some speculative need. So different categories still. It's there's the going a little further that takes place for persons who accept hearing from somebody who's freed from any motivations, more material motivations. And the pure devotee and the Supreme Lord, they're transcendentally attached to one another. So if one is choosing to hear from that devotee who's thoroughly cleansed, because of his transcendental attachment to the Supreme Lord, then it means that the person who's hearing can also come to enter into the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. And now the characteristic of prema or love for Krishna, because that's the question that's being asked here. So I've explored a little bit something of the background and this connection between piety and becoming fortunate. So at least the fortune, the true fortune, comes to be for those who are following the path of being able to enter into the pastimes of the Lord. So there's a need to look at the characteristic of love or prema, because that was a question that was asked here. This ecstatic love, or the perfection in ecstatic love that Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj have. So the particular characteristic of love for Krishna is, there's two characteristics. One is that it completely softens the heart. So the heart has become extremely soft. And the second one is, and this is interesting, prema or love for Krishna is marked by a highly possessive mood of ownership of Krishna. So this is very interesting. Now, ordinary devotional service, there's the mood. I am Krishna's. So I'm, you know, his servant, his humble servant. But at the point of loving Krishna, prema bhakti, which is Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj's position, there's the mood of Krishna is mine. So it's quite different. And there's a little breakdown that's done by Dhanadhara Swami in, he very carefully analyzed Nectar of Devotion, and he points out that in the preceding stage of Bhava Bhakti, one sees the Lord and understands that there's a relationship, but in prema bhakti, one actually has entered into that relationship fully as part of the activities and the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So it's getting extremely close, and it's that one has a spiritual identity in that pastime. So one becomes overwhelmed by a specific mood, and that mood is, oh, Krishna is my son, or Krishna is my friend. Because after all, one's got that mood, one possesses Krishna. So one thinks, Krishna is my son, and that's Mother Yashoda, Krishna is my son, or Nanda Maharaj too. Or one may even be thinking Krishna is my lover, like the gopis do. So this kind of state of such love for Krishna that one feels a kind of possessiveness of him, it's achieved by the maturation of ecstatic love, or bhava, which arises through this following of Vaidhi Sadhana. So just the following of the rules and regulations, it's a natural progression. But there's another way that this final stage can be reached, and that is through the extraordinary mercy of the Lord. So there's Krishna explaining this to Uddhava, and that's in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 15th verse, chapter, in the 13th verse. He says, the gopis of Vrindavan did not study the Vedas to achieve me, nor had they ever been to places of pilgrimage, nor did they ever devoutly execute any regulative principles, nor did they undergo any kind of austerity. It is simply by my association that they have attained the highest perfection of devotional service. So very interesting. It's a complete challenge to the other route of coming to the stage of prema, or great love for Krishna. The other way is just going very methodically, following the rules and regulations. And in fact, there's even books written on the benefits one gets should one bathe at an auspicious moment in one of the sacred rivers, or visit a particular place of pilgrimage in a particular month of the year, etc. But according to Krishna, it's merely his association that allowed the gopis to come to that great point of ecstatic love. So this is just in this discussion from Dhanadhara Swami that I've extracted this. And then breaking it down a bit further, there are two kinds of ecstatic love. One is called Mahatma Jnana Prema, and this kind of ecstatic love is mixed with knowledge of the Lord's greatness. And the second one is Kevala, which is unmixed, that ecstatic love. And that is that one is automatically attracted to Krishna without any extraneous consideration. So we can naturally see which category Mother Yashoda falls into. And that was the term even used well, in some sense, this prema, this ecstatic love, the question that was raised by Maharaj Parikshit. He's asking, how did Yasoda have this, and Nanda Maharaj have this, attain this perfection through their ecstatic love? And so we can see that it's certainly this kevala, this unmixed ecstatic love, because they're automatically attracted to Krishna. There's no consideration of anything. In this kind of kevala, or this unmixed ecstatic love, like Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj are showing, this is the description. The devotee lovingly fixes his mind upon Sri Krishna without the slightest deviation towards any other topic. So that's the sole focus of the mind. Now, the distinguishing feature of a pure devotee is that he's wrapped in thoughts of Krishna favorably. That means that he knows quite well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the example is given of Yudhisthira, who was inquiring from Vidura. And the understanding is that Yudhisthira had to be wrapped in thoughts of Krishna, because this is a distinguishing feature of a pure devotee. He asks, my uncle, you must have visited Dwarka. In that holy place are our friends and well-wishers, the descendants of Yadu, who are always wrapped in the service of Lord Sri Krishna. You might have seen them or heard about them. So there's understanding that these personalities who are completely wrapped in their attention on Lord Krishna, and that's the definition of this being in a state of complete ecstatic love, with only having one topic in the mind. So even how the questions asked of Maharaj Yudhisthira, it indicates he's in that position, wrapped in attention. So it means that the person is fully satisfied, because they have attained knowledge that transcends all distress, and in fact they've achieved the goal of life. So what it also means is that there's a kind of mental endurance that's been achieved. There's a kind of steady-mindedness, and this is called dhriti. It's given in Nectar of Devotion as one of the special characteristics of ecstatic love. So at that time, when there's that kind of dhriti, or the this kind of steady-mindedness, because remember, there's no other topic that's of any interest, it means that a person is never perturbed by anything, by any amount of loss. There's no perturbance, and nothing appears to be not achieved by him. So there's no aspiration, I'm going to achieve. It feels like everything's been achieved. So the mind is completely steady. So a person who's been elevated to this state of endurance, he thinks in this way. I do not want to be a highly rated government servant. This comes from Nectar of Devotion. So this gives you an insight into this kind of thinking, this not aspiring for anything further. I do not want to be a highly rated government servant. I shall therefore prefer to remain naked without proper garments. I shall prefer to lie down on the ground without any mattress. And despite all these disadvantages, I shall refuse to serve anyone, even the government. So in other words, when one is in ecstatic love of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that person can endure all kinds of disadvantages. I mean, you know, not having clothing, you know, having to lie down in an uncomfortable place is not a problem at all. Like, no problem. And it's not even considered a difficulty. So, so the regular material concepts of what's required for living, it's no longer so strong in the mind. I mean, I can tell you, like in a home, because I have to arrange my home, so I'm very conscious of these things. One thing's, this space will be allocated for, you know, steam cleaning clothing, because things have to be nice and smooth and straight. This space is going to be allocated for storing my machinery that's going to allow me to remove any speck of dust that's in this environment. So, you know, one's always thinking of all the things that allow for like mental comfort and cleanliness and peacefulness. But here we're reading that, you know, a person who's in that ecstatic state of love is actually thinking, I don't actually need anything. I'm quite happy to be without any garments. I'm going to lie down anywhere. It's no problem. So I have to laugh thinking, you know, what a long stretch up ahead it is to come to that point. So it's very natural. It's it just means that any discomfort is not really a problem. So the thinking of Nanda Maharaj, it's given here. So this is his internal thinking. In my pasturing ground, the goddess of fortune is personally present, and I possess more than 100,000 cows, which loiter here and there. And above all, I have a son like Krishna, who is such a powerful, wonderful worker. Therefore, even though I am a householder, I am feeling so satisfied. So you get some sense of his internal satisfaction. He's expressing it. He has nothing more that he wants to achieve. He's completely content. I mean, one could think, you know, there could be some anxiety of 100,000 cows. I mean, there's quite a lot of maintenance, I would imagine. But in his case, it's expressed as, you know, just this deep satisfaction. So Nanda Maharaj, due to his devotional service to the Lord, has this state of steady-mindedness or mental endurance. And that's the result of the absence of any kind of distress. Nothing is distressing. this is something given in Nectar of Devotion, this internal thinking of Nanda Maharaj. And there's another example that's given in Nectar of Devotion of this state of mental endurance due to the mind having achieved the best thing in the world. So here's another example. I'm always swimming. This is just a devotee. The words are quoted in Nectar of Devotion, but it's that attitude of the mind being completely steady. There's such mental endurance because everyone is completely satisfied having achieved the lotus feet of Krishna or that love for Krishna. So he has more internal thinking in that state. I'm always swimming in the nectarian ocean of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, I have no more attraction for religious rituals, economic development, sense gratification, or even the ultimate salvation of merging into the existence of Brahman. So one can understand the best thing that exists in the world is absorption in Krishna consciousness. Because no more is one dissatisfied, you know, wanting to achieve something, hoping to find something more comforting, or having to make some more arrangements because things are out of place. There's such mental endurance that everything is fine. There's no sense of having to achieve more. There's no sense of, I'm going to lose this, or this has been lost. What a tragedy. None of that is there. such mental endurance. So, anyway, very interesting set. I can smile about this and read this and speak it because, you know, I'm reflecting being in the other state. So, anyway, it's rather extraordinary. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he points out that Maharaj Parikshit, he was actually seeing that Yasoda's love did not diminish in the least. Even after she heard about and she saw the Lord's powers. and Maharaj Parikshit, he also understood that Yasoda and Nanda's love, it surpassed that of all kinds of regular devotees, or it surpassed, you know, those that are looking for some sort of result, the fruitive workers. So their devotion was surpassing those categories. And also, Mother Yasoda's love didn't change. Like, she didn't get disturbed fully by just having seen Krishna reveal to her the entire cosmos when she opened his mouth. So, you know, this is indication of that, you know, mental steadiness, that dhriti. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he points out that Yasoda thinks of Krishna as her son due to Vatsalya Prema. So she's got a parental mood of love. Remember, there's that possessiveness, that sense of, you know, Krishna's mine. But the way she's seeing Krishna is like from a parental perspective. He's my son. So that's that state of ecstatic love. And in her case, he literally took that role. Just as Krishna reciprocates even with those that are, you know, working with some result in mind for their own satisfaction, but they come to worship him, Krishna still is reciprocating with them. He reciprocates with Mother Yasoda in a particular way, and that is that Krishna feels that he can't fully reciprocate with her because of her affection. And he sees himself as actually remaining a debtor. It's like when somebody is extremely generous to one, one feels one can never really repay that person. Like when I was growing up, there was a friend of the family who was very kind to me, a woman, and I always felt very indebted to her for the great affection she showed towards me. So every time I'd visit my country of birth, she'd be the first person I'd go and see. And she was in her 90s, but I'd feel so happy seeing her and walking with her. And always that sense of indebtedness, because it's somebody who had given one love and caring. So, and one's always not able to ever repay that. It didn't matter how many times I may have taken her on an outing, I could never really repay her. So it's a similar thing. Krishna feels himself indebted to Mother Yasoda, and he's actually quite content to be dependent on her kindness towards him. So he's content to be receiving her mercy, her kindness, and he's content to have her be controlling him, and he's content to be crying for her milk. This is that being in that role of a debtor. That's how Krishna sees himself. And this interesting thing of that, you know, mental steadiness. Because we read that her love didn't diminish in the least, even though she got to see the whole cosmos in Krishna's mouth, which, you know, was a little bit out of her way of viewing Krishna. He's merely her son. So seeing this whole other aspect of him was a little bit out of her reality. But it didn't diminish her love in any way. She just put it aside and on went the love. You know, it's that mental steadiness. In fact, you could say that her mental steadiness was enhanced. This is that particular characteristic of this devotional love on that premise stage. So here's a description of seeing her in that state. Immediately forgetting Yogamaya's illusion that Krishna had shown the universal form within his mouth, Mother Yasoda took her son on her lap as before, feeling increased affection in her heart for her transcendental child. It's all very simple. So, now this transcendental pleasure or chit shakti that Mother Yasoda is experiencing is what's considered real life. So as opposed to all this other life that one's living with aspirations and some dissatisfaction, just having this kind of natural transcendental pleasure is considered real life. And so this is usually the goal of yoga, that a person who's practicing bhakti yoga, the demands of the body are being met, but one isn't unnecessarily arousing the senses. So one's accepting the necessities of life, but at the same time one is enjoying the transcendental happiness. And so this is Krishna consciousness. And just on a regular person practicing bhakti yoga, going through the sadhana Vaidhi-sadhana process, one starts to develop a kind of callous attitude towards any kind of occurrence in one's living. For example, having an accident, having disease, experiencing scarcity, or even experiencing the death of a dear relative. And the reason this is so is one is always alert to one's duties in Krishna consciousness. So it's, you can see that shift where, you know, just in describing the earlier persons who have some piety approaching Krishna with some motivations for their own satisfaction, when one's gone further and entered into a relationship with the person who's transcendentally connected to Lord Krishna's spiritual master, then this is what starts happening. One is always just alert to duties in Krishna consciousness. And so one endures any incidental occurrence, be it accident, death of a relative, etc., because one knows that this comes and goes, and it doesn't affect one's duties. One just stays with one's duties. And this is what's going to allow for that ultimate perfection in the practice of Krishna consciousness. And moving towards that kind of extraordinary platform of elevation of truly constantly experiencing transcendental happiness, which is Mother Yasoda's position because of her having developed great love for the Supreme Lord. So I've tried to explore it from the philosophical perspective without going into what the particular austerities are, since previous classes have touched on that. So if there's any question or thought connected to this topic. It's there.
Oh, there it is. Hare Krishna, Masaji. Thank you for your class. every Thursday of during this day of every year, I'll say Happy Thanksgiving, because you always give on Thursday, and thanks for giving a nice class. You actually made so many wonderful points. I had to stop taking notes.
Thank you. It coincided somehow. Thank you.
But I guess the theme of gratitude is the most important lesson in my life that I keep in mind, and I'll take away the points of gratitude, which pretty much was your whole class about, especially, like I said, there's many wonderful points you made. I'll begin with the statement you made where Krishna feels so indebted that I can't repay Mother Jasoda's love and affection. And another word for indebted is gratitude. And we see in the material world, when somebody has everything, so much opulences, there's no question of feeling indebted or grateful. You know, why would I be grateful? But we see that Krishna has everything, but he's still grateful. We have nothing, but we're still ungrateful. And that goes to the point, there's many points you made. You also mentioned that that absorption in Krishna consciousness, one who's absorbed in Krishna consciousness, there's nothing to be achieved. There's nothing that disturbs us. That's our, this verse mentions Mahabhagya. That's our fortune. That's our wealth. And Prabhupada will always quote that verse from the last verse of the Gita, chapter 6, the last verse, Yogi Nam Api Sarve Sham, Magatin Anta Atmana, Shradhavam Bhajate Yomam Same Yutatamo Mataha. That our most priceless treasure is, you know, always thinking of Krishna. And you were mentioning some obstacles in your life that sometimes may prevent you from thinking of Krishna, like a disorganized house. And I'll give credit to Jitendra. I hope this is not offensive, but it's not. But this is actually a glorification of him. If anyone knows him, you've seen his room, and nothing ever disturbs him. He's always satisfied and content in Krishna consciousness, even if he's disorganized. And that's the one lesson I could take from Jitendra. But we see there's many obstacles, thieves that still are remembrance of Krishna, like pride, envy, vengeance, which all are manifestations of ingratitude. There's a nice quote that says, you would never invite a thief into your house. So why would you allow thoughts that steal your joy to make themselves at home in your mind? And thoughts, ungrateful thoughts, envious thoughts, these are all manifestations of ingratitude. So one other last point I'd like to mention, a couple of points that you were mentioning. You said, you also quoted, like I said, this verse, Mahabhagya. There's a verse that Lord Chaitanya says, we're not fortunate for thinking of Krishna. This actually goes to the gratitude point. In the Madhya Lila chapter 19, I think verse 151, Chaitanya says, we're not fortunate to think of Krishna because it goes back to the gratitude point, because we can't think of Krishna without association of devotees who give us Krishna consciousness. He mentions that verse similar to Mahabhagya. He mentions that verse that uses the word Bhagyavan. Brahmanda Brahmite Konil Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Poi Bhati Lata Bija. A Bhagyavan, a fortunate person, is one who's attained the association of sincere devotees because they allow one to remember Krishna. And also one last verse I'd like to mention, there's so many points, forgive me for mentioning them, but this verse also mentions Shreya. When I saw that word, it reminds me of one of my favorite verses, similar to what Lord Chaitanya said in this previous verse. The most auspicious activities, Madhya Dasholo performed so many auspicious activities. The word Shreya was used, so and when Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Ramananda Roya, this is from Madhya Lila chapter 8, verse 251. He says, Shreya, Shreya, Made Kona Shreya, Jivara Hoisar, Krishna Bhakta Sangavina, Shreya Nahi Ar. The most auspicious activities is not to perform austerities and penances, but to attain the association of devotees because they give them one the wealth of Krishna consciousness. And sometimes it goes back to the ingratitude point, is that you were mentioning sometimes you were speaking to people during Sunday feasts and other, they want relief from distress. And in this verse, it mentions that with Mother Jasoda, with pious activities that she performed to attain association of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya says, what pious activities have we done to attain association of devotees? But usually we say, what sinful activities that I do to attain association of devotees? And so this goes back to the gratitude point. There's many points I want to make, but There's a quote that says, we may be at the right place at the right time with the right people, devotees, but if we have the wrong mentality and gratitude, then nothing can give us happiness. On the flip side of the coin, there's so many examples where great saints like Haridas Thakur, etc., they were at the wrong place. He was beaten 22 marketplaces. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people. But because he had the right mentality, love, mercy, compassion, and gratitude, everything can give him happiness. So my question, finally, I'll end with my question. Your question was, you mentioned when you were in South Africa, you felt so indebted to that woman who gave you so much love. So this is a question I asked previously. Sometimes we're ungrateful for the people who are antagonists. But we see that the qualities like humility, tolerance, forgiveness, mercy, these qualities are only meant to be used when things don't go our way, when people don't treat us properly. Nobody ever tells his rich parent, my dear father, I forgive you for giving me Mercedes-Benz for my birthday. You know, I'll tolerate my million-dollar inheritance. So what are some steps we can move forward to feel indebted to our antagonists, our so-called antagonists, who are actually giving us the opportunity to develop these good qualities, because other people aren't. We're actually developing negative qualities when we're shown so much love, actually, so much honor. We're being the center of the universe. So what are some steps we can move forward to develop gratitude like the great saints for our so-called antagonists who are actually helping us to develop Christian consciousness?
Okay, so you were pointing to the great fortune of getting the association of devotees, but on the other hand, that association can have problematic aspects, that it actually brings forth some bad qualities in one. Because one maybe is receiving praise, etc., and the question actually was that those bad qualities are getting augmented also by persons who are opposed to one. And particularly you were concerned, or the question was, how to see the antagonist to one as somebody who's going to help one to develop good qualities, which of course still leaves the problem of the devotees who are bringing out some of those, at least how you were expressing it, some of the not so good qualities in oneself, or yeah, pride, etc. So well, coming into devotional life, it's true that actually one can still be maintaining all one's own selfish interests, but one is coming to Krishna to further fulfill one's selfish interests. So that's different from a person who actively takes up sadhana practices. So the person who's taken up sadhana practices is a person who is concerned with cleansing the heart. And your question is expressing that concern, becoming aware of the dirt in the heart, those selfish motives, those becoming aware that even in devotional life, certain things are feeding bad qualities, maybe pride or competitiveness. So if one's finding oneself in that situation of recognizing the bad qualities, that's an extremely positive position, like extremely positive. It's it's quite different from those who are immersed in just fulfilling their selfish desires. One is actually attempting to perform auspicious activities that will please Krishna. So that effort in itself is allowing one to transcend selfish needs, selfish desires. That association of Krishna is the part that is performing the cleansing within the heart. So you were pointing to one's coming into the association of devotees who are giving one Krishna because they're connected to Krishna, but then it's maybe feeding one's bad qualities. So the simple way of not having bad qualities be fed is to, because one is taken to the sadhana process, is to, what praise is given to one gives it to one's spiritual master, because that's where it belongs. So that means that one's not taking something that isn't one's own to take, because the very process of devotional life is the acceptance of a spiritual master. So that means that anything that comes one's way, all the benefits, etc., that come through performing auspicious activity, one always turns and acknowledges one's spiritual master. I'm receiving this acknowledgement, I'm receiving these benefits, it is by your kindness upon me that this has come. So one always acknowledges one's spiritual master, and because that's equivalent to acknowledging the Supreme Lord and as one's close connection. So by doing that kind of acknowledgement, one isn't feeding anything that may be of a more negative quality within oneself as a result of receiving praise, or I don't know what else. Well, praise particularly was what you brought up. So that is the solution for that difficulty. And then in terms of persons that are specifically antagonists to one, this is a very interesting one. It's a very interesting one. Like, I'll give you an example to look at it graphically. I have a neighbor below who, ever since we first started doing some renovations on the space we were going to live in, and those renovations took a really long time because somebody dragged out the work unnecessarily in order, I guess, to extract more funds. So this woman was regularly, you know, pounding on the door, complaining about hearing the sound of boots, workers' boots, or she was pounding on the door because she could smell coming through her window some new fresh paint. Everything was a disturbance to her. And then finally, because of her complaints, we paid huge fees to the building management committee, just because we knew it was going on long and there was this woman complaining, so we dutifully did that. Anyway, we moved in and we walked past on the stairs and she's issuing a threat, "You're going to see." We both shrugged and said, "Oh, good morning, okay." And then some time passed and she had complained to the management board that we were making noise that disturbed her. So then we get this letter that, "Oh, this woman's still having a problem. Now you're going to get a registered letter for another fine." And so we both laughed and we refuse to pay any fine, and what exactly is this noise that she's complaining about? And through the analysis, it worked out that this woman had, because our schedule didn't precisely match her schedule, this was a cause of great disturbance to her. You know, when she needed to sleep was when we should also be sleeping. When she was awake or moving around, then we could be moving around, but we couldn't be moving around if she wasn't moving around. So, you know, obviously it was completely ridiculous, and it was interesting through that time, because, you know, you have to process. Somebody's been very antagonistic and is carrying ill feeling towards one. So, because one's in that secure, mentally steady position of serving Lord Krishna, one can look at everything very dispassionately. One can see, here is somebody with anger. Here's somebody with unrealistic expectations. And, you know, one draws the right lines. You know, you can go so far, you can't go further. So one draws boundary lines if somebody is being particularly antagonistic to one. And one can, because one's in a position of strength. One is serving Lord Krishna, and one's mind is steady because of one's sadhana practices. So one can very clearly draw boundary lines. So antagonists can't cross. then the truth emerges. Just like in this case, the truth emerged how completely ludicrous it was that, you know, we don't watch movies, we have no child running around, we have no pet running around. What noise is she referring to? And then finally it came down to, she hears some creaks on the floor. So, you know, who's going to take that seriously? So then the truth emerges, and then the person is quiet forever, because, you know, what ground does the person have to stand on? So it's like that. When there's antagonism, one just remains steady, and one can observe, and one can reason out something and draw a boundary line, so somebody can't actually cross a certain boundary line. So, like that. So, thank you very much for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.